The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 14th chapter, text number 39, given by His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami on December 13th, 1993, in Puerto Rico.
Translation. My dear King, when great sages and saintly persons saw mutually disrespectful dealings at the beginning of Treta Yuga, deity worship in the temple was introduced with all paraphernalia. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As it is said in Srimad Bhagavatam 12.3.52, Krite yad jayato vishnum tritayam yajato makai dvaparye paricharyayam kalo tad dari kirtanat. Whatever result one obtained in Satya Yuga by meditating on Vishnu, in Treta Yuga by performing sacrifices, and in Dwarpa Yuga by serving the Lord's lotus feet, one can also obtain in Kali Yuga simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. In Satya Yuga, every person was spiritually advanced and there was no envy between great personalities. Gradually, however, because of material contamination with the advance of the ages, disrespectful dealings appeared even among Brahmins and Vaishnavas. Actually, an advanced Vaishnava is to be respected more than Vishnu. As stated in the Padma Purana, Aradhananam Sarvesham Vishnur Aradhanam Param. Of all kinds of worship, worship of Vishnu is the best. Tasmat Parataram Devi Tadiyanam Samarchanam. And recommended more than worship of Vishnu is worship of the Vaishnava. Formerly, all activities were performed in connection with Vishnu. But after Satya Yuga, there were symptoms of disrespectful dealings among Vaishnavas. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said that a Vaishnava is he who has helped others become Vaishnavas. An example of one who has converted many others into Vaishnavas is Narada Muni. A powerful Vaishnava who has converted others into Vaishnavas is to be worshipped. But because of material contamination, sometimes such an exalted Vaishnava is disrespected by other minor Vaishnavas. When great saintly persons saw this contamination, they introduced worship of the deity in the temple. This began in Treta Yuga and was especially prominent in Dwarpa Yuga, Dvapare Paricharyayam. But in Kali Yuga, worship of the deity is being neglected. Therefore, chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is more powerful than deity worship. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu set a practical example in that he did not establish any temples or deities, but he profusely introduced the Sankirtan movement. Therefore, Krishna consciousness preachers should give more stress to the Sankirtan movement, especially by distributing transcendental literature more and more. This helps the Sankirtan movement. Whenever there is a possibility to worship the deity, we may establish many centers, but generally, we should give more stress to the distribution of transcendental literature, for this will be more effective in converting people to Krishna consciousness. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.247, Acharyayam eva haraye pujam yad shradhaye hate na tad bhakteshu chanyeshu sa bhakta prakrita smita. Quote, a devotee who is very faithfully engaged in the worship of the deity in the temple but does not know how to behave towards devotees or people in general is called a prakrita bhakta or kanishta adhikari. A prakrita devotee or neophyte devotee is still on the material platform. He certainly engages in worshiping the deity, but he cannot appreciate the activities of a pure devotee. It has actually been seen that even an authorized devotee who is engaged in the service of the Lord by preaching the mission of Krishna consciousness is sometimes criticized by neophyte devotees. Such neophytes are described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sarva Prani Samanan A Samartanam Avagya Spardhari Matam Tu Bhagavat Patimayava Patram Yahya. For those who cannot properly appreciate the activities of authorized devotees, deity worship is the only way for spiritual advancement. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya 7.11, it is clearly said, Krishna Shakti Vina Naha Tara Prabhartana Without being authorized by Krishna, one cannot preach the holy name of the Lord throughout the entire world. Nevertheless, a devotee who does so is criticized by neophyte devotees, Kanishta Adhikaris, who are on the lower stage of devotional service. For them, deity worship is strongly recommended. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prastaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namami. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishesha Sunyavani Pastatali Satarani. Prabhupada weaves together a number of themes here in the purport. One is about the danger of disrespectful dealings among Brahmins and Vaishnavas. He particularly mentions that we should never direct our criticism towards an empowered preacher devotee. That is suicidal. That's called the mad elephant offense. Like letting an elephant, a mad elephant, loose in your garden. You trample all the creepers. You trample the creeper of your devotional service. But it also will mean any kind of disrespect to any devotee. That's the first offense in chanting Sadhu Ninda. Blaspheme the devotees in dedicating their lives, propagating the holy name all over the world. So this starts with the deterioration of the ages in Treta Yuga especially. The sages saw that this is increasing now, all these disrespectful dealings, which in Kali Yuga they become worse and worse. Any conceivable relationship where there should be respect, it deteriorates. Well, juniors to elders, husband and wife, everything. Householders, sannyasis, the tendency is not to respect anybody. This is done when we are in materialistic consciousness. False ego, we want to get ahead, compete, and so on. And so we see people as competitors. And we're insecure, we feel threatened, we criticize them and get ourselves in great spiritual difficulty. So, and we were talking last night about that in Kali Yuga there's a special facility that if you think a bad thought but you don't do it, you don't get the blame. But we were saying how it's very dangerous because it's liable to get worse and worse, thinking, feeling, willing. There was an example that Bhrigu Muni, he was sent by sages to test who is the most tolerant of the gods. Then we can know who is supreme. So he went first to Lord Brahma, and he was disrespectful to Lord Brahma, but only in his mind. He didn't say anything, but still that was not considered offenseless. And Brahma detected, because actually if you don't say something, that's also an action on your part. Brahma expected some kind of words of respect from Bhrigu. And so by not saying anything, that's also not good. It's negative to say, don't blaspheme the devotees. But what it really, a further meaning of it is that you should be happy to see devotees, not simply neutral, that I don't like this devotee, but I don't want to get in trouble, so I won't say anything. Well, that's all right, at least it's better than saying something bad. But actually we should be happy to see devotees. So if we're not joyful, especially seeing a very advanced devotee, then that is also offensive. So Bhrigu did that, and Brahma was angry with him right away. Then Bhrigu increased his offense when he went to see Lord Shiva and said some bad words. Oh, Lord Shiva, you're supposed to be so supreme, but you're always associating with ghosts, and you wear a garland of snakes and skulls, and your body is dirty. But he criticized all these activities. So Lord Shiva became very angry. And then he just barely escaped with his life by intervention of Parvati. And then he went on to Lord Vishnu and committed a, we call it corporal offense, bodily offense. And he kicked Lord Vishnu in the chest, and that's still there. The Lord's chest, called the Bhrigupati, the mark of the foot, to show his tolerance towards the Brahmin. So the Lord was very tolerant, but that this is the three kinds of disrespect. We can't say that the first one is harmless. Even if the devotee forgives you, and devotees do, devotees are always forgiving. I don't mind. Like Arjuna, he had been offended in so many ways, he and his brothers and his wife, by the Kauravas. And he said, I don't mind. They want the kingdom, they can keep the kingdom. I don't want to kill them or fight them. So he forgave, but Krishna did not forgive. Krishna said, I don't forgive them. They must be killed. So if you offend the devotee, then Krishna will be offended by you. So the sages saw that this was coming, and therefore deity worship in the temple was introduced. So it's a little difficult to understand what is the causal relationship here, that because there were disrespectful dealings, deity worship was introduced, to try to understand it. Several places in the purport, Prabhupada talks about disrespect, especially he points out how an empowered devotee is criticized, a preacher. It has been seen that an authorized devotee engaged in the service of the Lord by preaching the mission of Krishna consciousness is sometimes criticized by neophyte devotees. Therefore, for those persons, if they would criticize devotees, of course they would ruin their spiritual life. But if they're not able to appreciate devotees, then what kind of spiritual life can they engage in? At least they can do the deity worship on the level of Kanishta Adhikari, but they're considered a lower devotee because of their inability to appreciate devotees and to appreciate others also, as others means that others have the Lord in their heart. So this seems to be the relationship of why of deity worship to the beginning of disrespect. At least deity worship will purify them. Prabhupada says it clearly at the end of the purport. A devotee who... what does he say? Unless you're authorized by the Lord, you can't preach the holy name all over the world. Still, a devotee who does this, he's sometimes criticized by neophyte devotees, Kanishta Adhikaris. For them, deity worship is strongly recommended. So another point he makes is that literature distribution is more important than the temples. And this should be understood sensitively. It doesn't mean, therefore, temples are not important, but one is more important. It's like we say the head is more important than the feet in the body, but does that mean the feet are not important? The head is important and the feet are important. So Prabhupada says, Krishna conscious preachers should give more stress to the Sankirtan movement, especially by distributing transcendental literature more and more. And he did this in his own life. Prabhupada really began active preaching rather late in his life, and then by then his spiritual master had disappeared, and there was quarreling in the mutt, in the big or India-wide organization known as Gaudiya Mutts, and it broke up. And at that time, there was a lot of stress about proprietorship of the different temples that were already existing. Who would own the temples? And construction of temples. So Prabhupada didn't get involved in any of that. And he just concentrated on writing for Back to Godhead and publishing it. And then he began, after he took sannyas, writing the Srimad Bhagavatam translation purports and publishing it himself and distributing it. And he, Prabhupada wrote, has written about that. The first duty of a person in the renounced order is to contribute some literary work for the benefit of the human being in order to give him realized direction towards self-realization. So the books were most important. He came to America with books and went on writing books. And then, once it got going, then he also pushed for a temple construction. Temples are also very important. So why? Prabhupada, in the purport, he seems to be indirectly referring to himself as a subject of criticism by other devotees. This occurs in a number of purports, not only indirectly, but we know from conversation and letters with Prabhupada that this was so, and some disciples of Prabhupada have actually encountered the criticism when you go to India. Why do they criticize Prabhupada? Of course, the deeper reason is, as mentioned here, this tendency towards disrespectful dealings, a tendency towards enviousness. When you can't do something that someone else does, then rather than admit it and offer that person honor, you try to find some fault in what that person is doing. And then it justifies your not doing it. So Prabhupada had to protect us from those criticisms so that we ourselves wouldn't criticize Prabhupada. Some of the things they criticized Prabhupada for is so liberally distributing Krishna consciousness to Western persons, and in order to do so, making certain adjustments in rules and regulations. He allowed the women to live in the temples and perform marriages, gave Brahmin initiation and even sannyas to persons who were not born or raised as Brahmins, and so on. All these things are authorized by scriptures and were specifically taught by his spiritual master, Bhakti Sranda Saraswati Thakura, who also broke with some of the custom at that time in order to do it. So the caste-conscious Brahmins, they may criticize some of these activities foolishly. and be envious of Srila Prabhupada. So we see in his life the ideal of a preacher who emphasizes the distribution of literature and active preaching. There's another statement by Prabhupada. He says that, "My Guru Maharaj used to say, prana acha yanrase hetu prachar. One who has got life, he can preach. The dead man cannot preach. So you become with life, not like a dead man. If you want to make an easygoing life, showing the deity and then sleep, then it is a failure movement." Now, we may ask, why are books more effective in this age, particularly, than the temple worship? And Prabhupada used to explain this by saying that in general, it's an irreligious age. The simple faith is lost. And also, people are proud about their education, their material education. So they want to learn things not just by going to the temple, but it has to be explained by philosophy, reason, and science. If you can, without such long explanations, simply take to the accept that the deity is Krishna and bow down to the deity and chant Hare Krishna, that's very good. But people are not so simple, they want so many kinds of explanations. Prabhupada used to say, if you want to argue with us, and come on, we have so many books we can prove to you Krishna is God in 60 volumes just to convince you. Well, this is one explanation why this kind of presentation is more suitable for the present day, the age of faithlessness. Anyway, people are not so much even building temples, they're building airports and commercial buildings, and temples are neglected, and temples are mismanaged. Without philosophy, then the temples are, you don't get anything by going to the temple. You only make your visit and see the deity. You don't hear discourses, you don't get literature, you don't get training. And so modern people, they don't want to go to the temple. And and the government is not so, in India, is not interested in the temples. So they deteriorate, they become historical monuments, then they become deserted go-downs, then they become places for crows and dogs. It's very unfortunate. So many old, beautiful temples in India like that. And in the West, so many churches and other religious buildings are sold, turned into something else. So the thrust of the book distribution comes first. Prabhupada was so fortunate and successful that he was able to do both. He printed his books, distributed his books, and then he took care to build very beautiful temples in India, and to have a base. And even the concept of the temple in ISKCON is that it's a place where devotees live to worship and to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, and they go out from that place to preach Krishna consciousness. So the temple is a very dynamic center, a center of learning, a center of preaching, center of worship. These points, especially these two points, we should understand carefully without any resentment or party spirit. That is, that we should be respectful to Vaishnavas, and that the literature distribution is most important of the various activities of Krishna consciousness. Anyone who is directly taking part in distributing literature is very a dear servant of the Lord, servant of Prabhupada and his spiritual master. If someone is not able to distribute books, then they should try to support this activity by their activities. Many ways you can do that. By financial support for the book distribution, by personal care of the book distributors, see that they have all facilities so that they can do their austere jagya. And there are so many supportive activities, backup activities, supplying books, supplying transportation, supplying morale. as we heard in the verse yesterday afternoon, even if you have good thoughts, that will be nice, rather than bad thoughts. That I don't like book distribution, I don't like book distributors, but have good thoughts and try to pray that someday, some way, you also can take part in it. So we should not be disrespectful towards those who are doing this primary work. On the other hand, the book distributors, they should not minimize or be condescending towards the other devotees and the various services that they're doing. Any disrespect is sadhu-ninda. First offense in chanting against the holy name. I remember there was a lot of questioning of Prabhupada about book distribution and its relationship to other activities. There was one letter he wrote to a devotee named Sri Govinda. And the devotee had written to Prabhupada saying that some devotees here say that some of the devotees are better than others, that like the book distributors are better than other devotees. So this doesn't sound right, that anyone is better than anyone else. So Prabhupada wrote back and he said that it's a fact that some are stronger than others. Not to recognize such distinctions would be impersonalism. Everybody is exactly the same in all ways. He said, for example, the Kshatriya, he is the strong man, the strongest one, physically, materially, of the varnas and ashrams. So we want to recognize that. We need to recognize the distinction. So we may, in different ways, we may acknowledge that you're the strongest. He give him certain honor and facility. Kshatriya wants to rule, and so on. But then Prabhupada wrote in this letter, but actually everybody is weak, and that everyone who's a devotee thinks like that, even if one is a powerful Kshatriya or a powerful preacher, book distributor. He thinks that actually I'm not strong, Krishna is the only strong. So there's only one strong, Purusha, that's Krishna. And so there, well, socially or individually, by varna, ashram, and other calculations, we may acknowledge that some are stronger, more advanced, more surrendered, or whatever, than others. But actually, everyone is dependent on Krishna. He gave this kind of suggestion, how to see it sort of simultaneously one and different. But none of this can be done begrudgingly or by force. When it's successful, say in a community, the devotees actually look up to the devotees who are doing the austerities of active preaching, and those devotees feeling happy and secure in their service extend their blessings to all the devotees without making the other devotees feel bad, but rather they in different ways try to encourage them to do what they can, and everyone is humble. But this should not be a cause of controversy, or then again you get this disrespect among the devotees. It can come from any side. I received a letter from Prabhupada on this point. Which I think explains it all rather expertly. I wrote a letter at a time, the same time, it was 1975, and there were controversial talks going on about who were the better devotees in the temple, the book distributors were the better devotees, and so on. So I wrote to Prabhupada asking for some clarification about it. And he wrote back, regarding your question about the controversial talks going on, this kind of talk is not befitting my advanced students. This is childish. In Krishna's service, there is no inferior and superior. Deity worship is just as important as book distribution. It is not material. Then he mentions the nine processes of devotional service, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. And he says if you do any one of them, it's as good as the other. Although the first two are very important, and everyone has to practice Shravanam, Kirtanam. Then he says, do not make any misunderstanding by devaluating any of the spiritual activities. Whoever distinguishes a particular type of service as inferior or superior, he does not know the value of devotional service. It is all transcendental. Whatever item is suitable, that is accepted as very elevated. Then he gives examples of different devotees who excelled in different items of the nine kinds of service. Hearing was the specialty of Maharaj Parikshit. He achieved perfection. Shravanam Kirtanam, speaking, preaching, glorifying, Shukadeva Goswami, remembering Prahlad Maharaj, worshipping Lakshmi Devi, worshipping the lotus feet, prayers, akrura, deity worship, what's his name, Ambarish Maharaj. Although Ambarish Maharaj? I think so. Or was it Prithu Maharaj? Anyway, Ambarish Maharaj, he's usually mentioned for all nine. He does everything. Savaimana Krishna, Padaravindayo, Vaikchamsi, Vaikuntu, Gunanavarnami. With his hands he cleaned the temple, with his feet he walked to the temple, with his words he glorified the Lord. All nine he did. But if you can't do all nine, you can do one. Then servitor was Hanuman, friend Arjuna, giving everything, Bali Maharaj. So then Prabhupada says, one devotee may be proud that his process of service is the best. That is not inglorious. This is called transcendental competition. Everyone should feel proud of his particular type of devotional service, but that does not mean that other types of service are inferior. This is hard to understand for materialists. They want to think like that, if I'm enthusiastic about what I'm doing, the only way I can do it is to put down others. I can't conceive of another way to be enthusiastic, except to be insulting to others. But here he's saying that it's not wrong for you to think I love my service, and as far as I'm concerned, this is the best service. Now, that's a good spirit. But somehow, you have to do it without putting down any body or any other service. And it can be done. That when we see somebody enthusiastic in their particular service, and they're not being threatening toward us, intimidating, that you should do what I'm doing, this is the only service, but rather they're just very self-sufficient, happy, serving their spiritual master and Krishna in their line of service, then what do we feel? We feel inspired, and not necessarily to do exactly what they're doing, but to do our service like that. Prabhupada, he said that the gopis are like that in their competition, that one gopi will make a beautiful garland and give it to Krishna, and other gopis will see it and say, oh, Krishna was very pleased by that garland. Let me try to make an even better garland, a better offering, not so that I can put down that gopi, that idea doesn't come to them, but that I can make Krishna happy, as she did. Why not make Krishna even happier by something even better? And then if they do that, then the other gopi will see that and want to do better. So it's a competition where nobody suffers or gets hurt. There's no malice. And yet there is some energy there. So I think we can take it that way, that whenever we see somebody doing something nice, it doesn't pinch our heart like envy. Oh no, that person is doing something nice. This makes me unhappy. And then the opposite, that if somebody suffers or falls, you think, good, this is good. This, now I've gained, I'm ahead now, because this other person looks bad. This is so unfortunate, we don't even like to mention it, but Prabhupada says this is actually the mentality of the conditioned soul. So there's a saying that the different animals, wild animals, can be trained. Even a venomous snake can be trained by mantra. But the only envious creature who can't be rectified is a human being. he can become so envious. And so his symptom of envy is like that. That he is publicly, when he sees someone gets fortune or honor, he also says, very good, very good, I'm very glad. But inside he's thinking, I don't like this. He's getting this honor. And then if he sees somebody go down, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. But he's thinking good. So This is not transcendental. So Prabhupada has done it so nicely here, saying that so the spirit of the book distributors is, who have such great spirit, or whatever the group may be, or the individual about his service, that's good. But this is the best. We want to perfect our service and get better in our service. But then he says, the pure devotee never minimizes the importance of other devotees. Krishna is the enjoyer of varieties of service. There was another incident where a devotee said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, the devotees here, I think it was in Hawaii, they're not all just distributing your books. Some of them want to develop farms and other things. What do you think of this, Prabhupada? And Prabhupada said, do you think the spiritual master is a dead stone, that he cannot reciprocate with devotees in different ways, individually? So he does. He encourages this group and that the book distributors. He encourages those who want to start farms. He encourages the householder and the brahmachari. And even if technically there may be gradations of superior, lesser, and lesser, in an absolute sense, they're the same. And there shouldn't be minimization of anybody. Because Krishna, he likes all the different things. Krishna likes the arrows of Bhishma, when Bhishma shoots arrows at him. Krishna likes the embraces of the gopis. He likes it when his father fondles him. He likes it when Narada preaches. He wants all these different services, not just one. So why am I, in the name of being a devotee of Krishna, saying, no, not this service, only this service? Krishna likes all the services. It is not stuck up with any particular type of service. Krishna takes pleasures with devotees in every way. There is no question of inferior and superior. The conclusion is that everyone should be very sincere. So that those are really practical applications for this subject matter. Although the verse and the purport make the points that literature is more important than temple, and that we should be very respectful towards Vaishnavas. So I'll stop here for any questions or comments further. We're done.
So, can be actually contamination, material contamination with devotee who disrespect of the devotee, or is a matter of intellectual understanding, education, like that, or is it just contamination? Can be, has to be purified, otherwise, you know, that will come out.
I don't think I understood your question about intellect and education.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if that with respect attitude,
yeah,
for all the devotees,
yeah,
is the result of the material contamination of the devotees.
The disrespect.
Disrespect.
Yeah, it's a kind of, it's a material contamination that we show disrespect due to envy. It's the age of quarrel, so it's the nature of things. On the slight pretext, you make some fight with somebody. There's not really an important reason to quarrel, but you quarrel anyway, and it gets a very serious quarrel. So it's a general contamination of this age. We can pinpoint and say it's envy, but it's just liable to happen. Like in the dry season, fire is just liable to happen. So we have to be... We have to try not to be quarrelsome with devotees. Familiarity breeds contempt. We tend to quarrel because we forget who they are, that they're special people, because we're always seeing them. And people, they're even disrespectful towards Krishna, like that. So it's just a general contamination, material contamination. We have to purify it and be very careful not to see devotees by the material vision. Raghupati, from here. How can we please you best? Is that it?
Yeah. No. Something like that. And, you know, you probably know his Lord. But Prabhupada very actually said, for all to develop love of God.
So everybody was encouraged. Yeah. There was a similar thing that happened in Atlanta, in a similar audience. And the devotee asked, Prabhupada, how can we please you best? And he said, by loving Krishna. So it's not stuck up in a particular way. Oh, no. Yeah.
You know, I was thinking, you were talking about these disagreements even in the Christian family. Even though they were an ordinary person, still they fought each other and they killed each other. And then when Krishna was present, he could do that through them. He could that end and he was walking on himself. Or even in a Christian family and so forth. So the body and mind. They are great souls, but these disagreements took place. So in Kali Yuga is more prominent, these hiding spirits, and sometimes the contamination takes place in temples, in meetings, and so forth. So, in material, because we are immature, we don't see that he's a devotee, he thinks he's living in material terms, no, he's trying to hurt him. So, how we can at least tolerate all the time that situation?
One thing, as Prabhupada says, that a devotee should be proud of his service, that it's the best. Everyone should feel proud of his particular service. Become proud of being a sincere devotee of Krishna. So I think that if I become really fixed and enthusiastic in a particular service, then I feel secure. And then even if I hear second-hand or third-hand and somebody criticize me or somebody directly criticizes me, it's not that my whole world will become shaken up and I'll see that this person is attacking me and he may destroy me or something like that. But if I'm secure, I know that this is a bona fide service to Prabhupada. He's kind enough to accept this service and I'm doing my best. Then others cannot hurt me and I won't feel so much threatened by the inevitable little quarrels that are going on, and I'll just see it as, I won't be disappointed that there's any quarrel, but I'll just take it as not so threatening to me, and it's not even, the issues are not so important. It's more important that we just work together. One devotee, Atreya Rishi, wrote to Prabhupada that he observed that there was quarreling among some devotees in the temple, or differences of opinion. And he said, I think this is a sign of impersonalism. And Prabhupada wrote back and said, no, it's not. It's because everyone is an individual. He said, rather, if you want everyone to be the same, that's impersonalism. So that people have differences of opinion is not unusual. You can't even prevent it. And it may be expressed by them in ways that sometimes aren't so palatable. But if I don't get swept up in that, you know, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, tit for tat, but I just know that I have my place. It's a tiny place, but I have my place in the corner of the feet of Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya. And this devotee does also. So I'm not so I'm not going to get caught up in all this politics or quarrel, but although it will go on because we're differences of opinion. And then try to not allow such things to be like the Yadu dynasty where everybody attacks each other with sticks. Those are some ideas about it. Don't expect everyone has the exact same opinion, but try to see that we're different. Everyone wants the same goal. The mature devotee manages to inspire different devotees, and an immature devotee will cause divisions and fights and stuff.